Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette Recaps, His Dark Materials with Peter Sagal. I'm Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita.
And we are with Peter Sagal.
Who liked it?
Whoa.
I know, it took this long, but we're here. I enjoyed an hour of television, and I'm ready to tell you why.
So today we are recapping the season one finale of His Dark Materials. It was called Betrayal. Just to get started, I would like to say we are all very worried about Marcel. We haven't heard from him yet. So, Marcel, if you're out there listening, Courtney, let us know how Marcel is doing, because we just want to make sure that everybody's okay.
Marcel is the young man who's been watching the show with his mom.
Yep,
and
Courtney
has been sending in these wonderful joint voicemails to us describing their reactions.
Yep.
And Marcel seems innocent and sweet, and we're concerned
exactly
about how he might have reacted to this episode.
Yeah.
You guys weren't worried about my innocence.
Well, you read the book.
Oh, after you after speaking of betrayals. I expected with the title of the episode that it would end with Lord Asriel admitting that he had read the books and knew what was happening the whole time. That's the betrayal I thought this was going to be about.
Yeah, you knew what was going to happen, bud. You're fine.
It was still a lot.
It was a lot. Let's listen to all the voicemails we got about hopes for the finale.
Sure.
And then we'll unpack it.
Hey, Nerdette and Peter.
Hello, Greta, Trish, and Peter. This is Thomas in Oregon.
This is Leah. I'm from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Nerdette. It's Derek from Chicago. Big fan, longtime listener, first-time caller.
My name is London. I'm from Mississippi.
This is Virginia from Seattle.
Hey, Nerdette Recaps. This is Barbara from Germany.
My name is Kanani. I'm here in Chicago, and my demon would be a black cat.
A pocket-sized mule.
A finch.
My tabby cat, Milo.
A baneful hedgehog.
My demon would be a flamingo, I guess.
And I'm calling because on the plane today, I saw Detective Pikachu, and I really noticed how every person there had a Pokemon with them.
I'll become the control since a certain someone broke and read the first book. Although, no hard feelings, like, honestly, same.
I'm actually calling about Mrs. Coulter.
I'm curious if anyone else thinks that Iorek Berneson's voice just sounds like an extremely gruff Winnie the Pooh.
Peter has been talking about how she's this unhinged villain and it makes her weak. She is not weak. This is coming from someone who's a little unhinged themselves.
And I just wanted to say that I'm really excited.
This last episode has me so worried for Roger.
As for the finale, I really hope we haven't come this far just for Roger to now be sacrificed by some alternate means of dust capture that Asriel has developed that's just as treacherous as Mrs. Coulter's.
Ever since you posed the question, where have all the demons gone? I've just had a song running through my head.
I'm watching and listening to this show a few weeks later than the rest because it's broadcasted this way in Germany. I know you're on to the last episode of the season, and I hope it will be awesome.
I will do all the talking if you'll be a physical manifestation of my soul.
Wait, is Roger, like, hot priest or something? Because don't they have the same initials?
What happened to the wolves? Where have all the demons gone?
Anyway, I love you guys.
I wish you all the best. Bye.
Bye.
And Peter, stay sassy, okay? Don't let anyone change you.
Wow.
That's the best voicemail montage I have ever heard.
You say that every time.
It's great, though. I'm genuinely and always newly impressed with Justin's montage making skills.
I do think threading the dude singing
that was
under
really
was
something.
Very artful.
Especially with the instrumental introduction before he got to the lyrics, which was,
for
I thought,
while.
Really great.
Stay sassy, Peter. Stay.
Like, don't let anybody get you
I
down.
Love that. I love somebody calling in to express the opinion of the unhinged community. I was like, yeah.
as a designated representative of unhinged women people. Everywhere.
How dare you say that about the unhinged?
Okay, so where did we start even this episode?
I don't know. We can start with something that I noticed. It might have been the pre-credit sequence. That for the first time that I can remember, somebody mentioned the authority.
Oh, yes. In the Magisterium, that is the first scene.
Yes.
They're all freaked out.
I had been wondering about
this. Yeah, they mentioned channeling the authority.
And the authority comes up again and again in the episode.
Yeah.
And if you listen to the context, it's pretty clear that they say authority where we in our world might say God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because mm-hmm. that's who the Magisterium serves, is the authority. And it's weird to me they never brought it up. As far as I know, I haven't heard the word.
Yeah, I don't think they had until this episode.
So we never heard the word authority. Remember, I had always said, who does the Magisterium worship? What is their religion?
Yeah, the authority.
The authority. And all of a sudden it's there. And I'm wondering, why did they wait? Why didn't they let us know prior to this that at the center of the theology is this deity called the authority?
I mean, it is a very intense name for a deity.
It's pretty
like
cool.
It indicates a lot about what they think, that it's just like this scary boss man.
Kind of, it's kind of a corporate org chart version of eschatology.
They have name dropped sort of things from our understanding of our world's Christianity enough that it felt like, oh, this is monotheistic and such. Like there's references to Adam and Eve. There's ideas of blasphemy, so there has to be someone to blaspheme against, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's been cleared throughout. I mean, they had quoted their Bible, I think, in a prior episode. The Magisterium is clearly like the Catholic Church with its clerics and its organization, but they had never gone so far as to say, worshiping whom? We know they had an Adam and Eve. Is there a Jesus? Or a Jesus-like figure.
Yeah, we don't know about the Jesus
part. And it was just, I just noted that all of a sudden they're saying, oh, we're about the authority. We do what the authority wants. We act in the spirit of the authority. I was like, well, okay, that's good to know, I guess. But where was this the last seven episodes?
I wonder if they're extra obsessed with original sin because they don't have a Jesus in their theology.
It's possible, because as you would know better than I, Jesus was supposed to come and save us
small. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
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 So the other scene we have before the opening credits hit is Azrael scheming, and he's talking with his leopard demon, and his demon says, it's time.
It's time.
And he says, I know.
I'm just going to say what this TV show needed all along was lots more James McAvoy.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He's excellent.
He really is.
As we've done in the last couple episodes, I think we should start with the Will storyline first and just kind of get that out of the way since we don't spend a whole lot of time there. And then we'll get to Lyra's business.
That helps my brain and maybe the listeners' brains. Yeah.
Well, gosh. Okay. So I'm just going through my notes, finding the Lyra or the Will stuff. Is the first thing we see, we learn that the creepy dude with the mustache is actually a cop.
Yeah. He apparently is some sort of cop. I was like, oh, the first thing we saw was that guy died, as I believe
the
Trisha
other guy
predicted.
Died. Yes,
the other guy's dead. He's lying there.
Yeah, he's dead, which gives Will a very good reason to flee, right? Because all of a sudden, you know, he was already worried about authorities getting to know his mother and thinking that she was unfit to be his parent,
and now he's
like kind of accidentally killed somebody. So we find out there's an APB out on Will Perry.
Mm-hmm. So he's being chased about.
And then he just kind of lurks moodily in a lot of different places.
He does.
He's hunkering down pretty hard.
He glowers from the shadows.
He follows a cat for a while. Wow, now that I think of it, it's actually a very simple storyline from Will in this episode.
Hunkering, glowering.
Boreal is just mad that they let him go. But I don't know what else we learn about Boreal in this moment. He's back and forth again.
I guess what we learn about Boreal is that he hadn't realized that Will was part of the action, if you will, right? Because Boreal learns...
Didn't know how much the kid knew, basically.
Exactly, or how important the kid would be, right?
Because
Boreal learns from the alethiometer dude that Will's dad is what, like in a tower surrounded by angels?
The alethiometer, I believe he says, there is a knife in a tower of angels. There is a knife in a tower surrounded by angels.
Yes, and his son will lead him to it.
Right.
Right.
And those of us who have read the second book know exactly what the knife is anyway. I don't remember a tower. But
yeah, well, I mean, the second book is called The Subtle Knife, so maybe that's not...
Yes. Not so subtle.
Super astonishing.
Not really. The not-so-subtle knife. Jeez, guys. But... and I remind everybody that I did, in fact, enjoy this episode, but it was weird to see, like, this is the whole culmination of the entire Our World plot thread.
Yeah, I was a little, that was my biggest disappointment of the episode, and is that it was its conclusion, and we can wait till we get there to really unpack
but,
it.
But what did we end up finding out about Will?
I don't know. I mean, what I wrote down about Will is Will hunkers down, Will walks and hides, Will sits, Will still sits until he sees a cat.
It's like one of those early reader books. Like, Will walks down the street is the most complex sentence.
Will puts on his hoodie. You're right. I mean, anybody who's listened to me gas on about all kinds of things for I don't know how long this show, the last show, knows that I believe
years,
character
Peter.
Comes from action, you know.
Yeah.
You can describe a character, the character can have flowery language, but what does the character do? That's how you know what kind of person it is. And he hardly does anything. As you say, he glowers and is shifty and hides, and that's it. And he hasn't done much other than that. He kind of accidentally killed a guy?
I think he is like co-conspirator to the cat. I think the cat is really the murderer.
You think
as I usually feel about
no,
cats.
That's, yes. Yeah, you know who to accuse. If I'm found dead in my apartment, that's
oh, it's
sure.
Definitely your evil cat. If anything happens to Greta, everyone, it was
Seth.
Her evil cat.
It's totally Seth.
The only last thing I can say about the whole Will plot thread for this entire 8 episodes is those of us who've read the books know Will doesn't appear until book 2.
Right.
They clearly made the decision, let's bring Will in book 1 so that as we go into season 2, I'm sorry, I said book, I meant season.
Uh-huh.
As we go into season 2, people will have a sense like Will is important.
Yeah.
But after 8 episodes, I don't think if you haven't read the books, you have any idea why this boy is important.
I mean, I still think you have a bigger sense than if we hadn't heard about him at all, right, until season 2.
Well,
like, I think it was a smart way of doing it. And I think we got to know him to the extent that we know he loves his mother dearly and that he has to take care of her more than he should for a 12-year-old kid.
Right.
And that he's got this very mysterious, interesting father who he doesn't know much about, which is like enough to be mildly curious, I think.
I guess so. Mildly curious is, let me put it this way. Ending up being mildly curious is not a sufficient payoff for what must have been, when it was all said and done, a solid hour of television over the course of the season, going back and forth to his, you know, and you end up being mildly curious?
Yeah.
I think
that's it.
I think they just didn't trust us to spend time in season 2 in Will's world away from Lyra. Like, I think that they're like, oh, we've built an entire show around Daphne Keene, and we can't have the start of season 2 be several episodes with
without
just some other person
Lyra
and not Lyra.
Exactly, yeah.
And the way time seems to work in the show seems, even though there's fantastical things going on, time seems to make more sense in some ways than it did in a show like Game of Thrones.
Yes, it is a flat circle here,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah, there's not like the big opening episode of season 2 of His Dark Materials stars somebody you've never heard of and not everybody you watched last season. Like, that would have been weird too, man.
I do think the payoff was unsuccessful. Like, I think they did so much back and forth that I think it would have been very satisfying if they had actually met at the end, even if it were just like the briefest scene of the two of them looking at each other. Like, that I think would have been so much more exciting than just both of them wandering.
I think you're possibly right. And although the reason I'm sort of stalling is because I wanted to pull up my copy of the book, which is on my Kindle.
Let's wait. Let's start from the beginning of the episode and go through it, and we'll get to the end when we get to the end.
Right.
So we have Lyra talking to Asriel. There are a couple really good scenes with those two interacting.
Yes, indeed.
Let's listen to a little bit of Lyra confronting her dad, knowing now, like telling him that she knows that he's her dad.
I would have been so proud.
Why would you have been proud?
Because you're Lord Asriel. And you're my father.
Your mother, she... Do you know who your mother is?
Your choice in women is almost as bad as your choice in bears.
I don't think we should continue this conversation.
Why not?
Because it is getting sentimental.
Sentimental?
And because I wouldn't like to. Are you crying? It's unnecessary. Lyra Balakwa, you are stronger than that.
It's Silvertongue now.
You don't want my name.
Silvertongue feels like my name.
It was given to me by someone who actually loves me, which is better than I can say for you.
I love that. She rejects Balakwa, he rejects the alethiometer, and subsequently fatherhood, essentially.
I know.
The rest of that scene goes down.
That was such a better scene of that variety than we have ever seen before, and it's partially because James McAvoy is so brilliant, but it's also because it's so sort of complex. Is Asriel a bad guy or a good guy? And that kind of, he's both, obviously, and that kind of complexity is something that we've missed to this point, at least insofar as it was successful. And so it was, it seemed almost in a weird way for this context real, in a way that a lot of other important emotional interactions have been in the show have not.
Mm-hmm. Tricia, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I completely agree with what Peter just said. I think that her feelings about him are genuinely complicated, because with Mrs. Coulter, it's like, oh, everything from the music to the costuming is saying villain, villain, villain the whole time.
I think,
right?
Too, the fact that she never knew Mrs. Coulter,
right,
before,
and that they had
either.
No,
like,
pre-existing relationship,
yeah, with Asriel.
Whereas, yeah, and also I think in some ways we are in the show, you know, a little worried about why he had such a strange look on his face when Roger showed up and all that. But up until this point, we see him as a maybe not paternal figure, but not a villain in any way. Right. He's been kind to her in his own way. He made sure she was safe, all these other things, you know, kept her from getting killed, murdered, basically, to keep her safe in the end. Like, he has done things and made some sacrifices for her, not as many as sort of a traditional, you know, parent would. But so it makes sense that their relationship is just genuinely complicated.
It is true.
So from there, we go to the creepy airship.
Yes.
And Mrs. Coulter talks with Father MacPhail.
Again. So many conversations with Father MacPhail about how important she is.
Well, we do get a little more backstory on Mrs. Coulter. And I think, too, I mean, that line from MacPhail, we have firepower and belief.
We have firepower and belief.
Two mighty weapons.
I think is pretty chilling.
That's a good one.
Right?
Kind of seems like maybe one of the things that they take between worlds as a sort of authoritarian regime is weapons from our world, right? We talked about this a little bit,
yeah,
in the last episode, but those seem very much like our world SWAT team sort of weapons and things. And to see them on that airship is a little chilling also, to go, oh, maybe, mm-hmm, yeah, that would make sense that terrible people would actually just use it to trade arms.
Yeah, I don't know if that is, I mean, that definitely isn't a thing from the books, but it is interesting just visually how much they obviously look like they don't fit in that world for sure.
Yeah. It was also nice, just speaking as a boy, to have a nice big battle. Boom. Yay. Boom.
Okay.
Gather round and listen while old Peter Sagal mansplains this show to you.
Boom.
So then from there we go back to Asriel's lab.
Yes.
And Lyra's brushing her teeth.
That was there was this moment
was
where,
like,
her servant says,
though?
Does she have everything she needs?
Yeah.
A brush for her teeth? A toothbrush? And I'm like, did he just invent that word? Did we just note in this universe the invention of the word toothbrush just happened? It was,
yeah,
such a strange way to put it.
It was very strange. Well, and yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I was a little skeptical of the toothbrush.
Little
thing,
toothbrush. But he,
you know,
clearly cared. And,
yeah.
And then they had that scene. I don't know if you wanted to get to this next.
Lyra's taking a bath.
Well, Lyra's taking a bath. There's two scenes. First, when Roger walks in backwards.
Yeah.
And his demon walks in backwards, too.
No.
Oh,
sweet Roger.
Just the best. If they had more of that through this entire series, just more little grace notes like that,
yeah,
I'd be a much happier person.
It was
person.
Really lovely.
But then that scene and then the subsequent scene where they're kind of camping under the sheets. And it,
yeah,
was, you know, like, as one of the magisterium guys says, there's some sort of encampment in the bedroom, which I thought was cute. Those were lovely scenes, and we haven't talked enough about how the actor who plays Roger is really great.
He's so good.
He hasn't been given a lot to work with, but he's been there and very present, and
yeah,
he gives off an aura of goodness and innocence.
He really does.
And those scenes were lovely. It seemed to me that they were saying, hey, guys, Lyra really loves Roger.
Yeah.
He is her only real friend in this world. Just,
yeah,
note that.
Right.
Everybody cool with that? Because just wait. And I'm like, yeah, those are really nice scenes. We should have known that by this time.
Yeah, well, especially given that the whole reason for her going this far is to find Roger. It would have been nice if they had established that a little earlier, for
right,
sure.
Right.
Let's listen to Roger and Lyra talking, because it's cute.
So look at the alethiometer. Ask it how he really feels. Does it know everything? Does it know everything that will happen to us?
I think so, but I think it only tells me what it wants me to know, so...
Then let's not use it. So we just know what we know, I suppose. I mean, I'm not like you. Would never have chosen to leave Jordan.
I know.
But now here we both are. Halfway around the world. And I'm here because of you. And you're here because of me.
Because we changed each other's lives.
I like the fact you changed my life.
Can't promise I won't stop changing.
Aw.
So sweet.
It was very sweet. Was it necessary? Should it have been necessary? I don't know. But it's certainly... All I can say is that, having just recently reread the book, I was afraid that they would cheese out of the act of betrayal that gives the title...
Yeah.
The episode its title that is the point of the whole book. That's where we get to the point. The big reveal of what Asriel is up to. And I was afraid because it's such a dark thing to do. And as we've talked about, they have really... tamped down the darkness of the book, but they did it. They went for it, and they did it with all the power and dramatic weight and horror, even. That's why we're worried about Marcel, that you could ask for, which is primarily the reason I'm thumbs up in this episode.
Yeah, I did really love the line that was from their bath time conversation too, when because they're both orphans.
Yes.
And I think you kind of lose that, and they're obviously still from such different social strata.
Mm-hmm.
But when he tells her parents are more trouble than they're worth, and like, you know, for her having thought that she was an orphan for most of her life, and then finally realizing that these two, like, if not villainous, then at least deeply complicated people are her parents, I thought was just another really lovely moment for them to have.
Yes. No, it was great. I mean, if you put aside the question of, do we need this now? Should we need this now? They were lovely scenes.
Well, that's one of the most positive things that you've said.
I'm working on it.
So I guess we'll take it. So from there, Asriel pulls Lyra out of the encampment.
Yes.
And that's when we get like one of our biggest conversations yet about what dust actually is.
Yes.
Let's listen to a little bit of that.
They have been trying to convince us for centuries that we are born guilty. And that we have to spend a lifetime atoning for the crime of eating an apple. Is there any proof for this heinous stain, this shame, this guilt? No, not at all. We are to take it on faith and on the word of the authority. But dust is an elementary particle that we can record, measure, study. We can take photograms of it, and it has given them what they need, a means by which to control, to oppress, to frighten, and to keep us where they want us, on our knees.
That's what my mother thinks she's doing. Cutting away our demons. Preserving our sinless souls. You should have seen them. Those who had their demons cut away. They looked empty.
Did they try to cut you, Lyra?
She stopped them.
Your mother stopped them?
She didn't want to damage me. Happy to damage others.
Is that a fact?
The thought of Pam being cut from me.
The bond between human and demon is incredibly powerful. Quite beautiful, really. There's actually an immense release of energy when that link is severed.
Ooh, did you hear that chord when he said an immense amount of energy, immense release of energy when that is severed? And you're doo-doo. There's so many things to talk about. As you said, here it is. Here's like not only an explanation of what dust is or what it might be or what it isn't, but also deep theology, which has been lurking around the corners of this whole show. And now it's front and center. This is about original sin. This is about Eve in the garden. This is about a church trying to control people's souls through what they think is original sin. And this is pretty heady stuff for a kid's TV show or a kid's book, which is, again, one of the reasons I like the book so much.
Yeah, totally. This is, it's funny because, you know, I mean, I read this book when I was in seventh grade and I ended up like going to a college where I studied a fair amount of Christian theology. And so it's kind of funny to like backtrack that interest because like it has kind of been a through line for me because I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah. And it's as we talked about in the first episode, this is based on Paradise Lost. This is about the fall of man and the redemption and the rebellion of Satan. And we're really getting into it finally. Yeah.
Well, and I think another way of looking at original sin for people who aren't like super well versed in all this stuff is essentially it's free will, right?
Right.
Like it's the idea that Eve was allowed to eat an apple even though God told her not to.
Right.
And like you could have had a world theoretically where God created humans who just obeyed him all the time, who were right. just like these robots. But that didn't happen. And that's free will. And that's original sin, and I guess maybe that's dust, too, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
I took a whole class called God and Human Suffering that was about just that.
Did they figure anything out?
How did you do in that class? Did you figure it out?
I did great. Well, I mean, the idea is essentially, like, free will means you have the good stuff and the bad stuff, right?
Right.
It means you get to live your life the way you want to, but it also opens up the possibility for evil in the world.
Right.
And that's how it exists.
And if you cut away people's sin, quote unquote, I'm making little quote marks with my fingers, then you end up sort of dead inside or in your eyes like that sad nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sister Clara.
Or the severed kids.
Yeah, then there's no point in any of it.
And this has been like under the whole story the whole time, this very strange, heady stuff about original sin and theology. And I don't know if it's good that, remember I said that we just started hearing the name of the authority for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the strategy of sort of backloading it to now as a big reveal was perhaps the wisest.
Yeah, I'll admit that it's still a little intellectually muddy for me, like what they believe and why. And I mean, it was the clearest explanation of what they think dust might be, but it still doesn't totally make sense, but it doesn't make sense to me in an interesting way. So that's not a critique of the storytelling. It's more just that it feels like they're sort of tying themselves in knots to connect the world of theology to the world of science, which is, you know, a thing that is in our world too. But this idea that they're blending those two worlds, that they're trying to do scientific experiments to prove or disprove something that is theology.
Right. As a matter of fact, they use the phrase experimental theology
as to what
they're doing at Bullvanger, which exactly captures what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That weird combination of scientific techniques and, you
know. As somebody who watches and reads things about theoretical physics for fun, not that I like understand them, but I just am a big fan of, you know, the nerdery of space and physics and all those things. I kind of want them to go deeper into that weird science lane. In the way that, like, a Doctor Who monologue might, but that I also know that, like, what we got is as far as we should go, because it's not really that kind of show.
Mm-hmm. So from there, Asriel again tells Lyra she comes from something extraordinary.
Yes, we get that a lot.
Mrs. Coulter is increasingly unhinged, which we've pretty solidly established in previous episodes as well. And then Lyra wakes up, and Asriel and Roger are gone.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that whole sequence, I got no complaints. The just growing terror of what Asriel was doing with Roger, Roger's increasing concern, yet his inability to rebel and walk away, because that's not what he does. He's a good kitchen boy. Lyra's desperate chase with the help of Yorick Bernison.
It was awful convenient, I thought, that she could just run outside and be like, Yorick! And he's like, what's up? I'm here.
He was there.
I'm a king who just happens to be hanging out outside this weird lab.
It had only been like one night, right?
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to hang here because he probably thought that they were maybe going to go back the next morning.
He said he'd stay near, but he, like, you know.
I also don't remember him bringing all his bears, but it was nice that they were there.
Yeah. I was annoyed by the bear fight.
You were annoyed by the bear fight?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it felt unnecessary. Also, why is Mrs. Coulter suddenly in charge of the Magisterium
again? They also, we're getting toward the ending, which is what we should save to the end, but we all remember the famous Chekhov thing, like if you have a gun in the first act, it has to be fired in the second act. The first thing you see of Mrs. Coulter is her loading that revolver. When Mrs. Coulter appears for the final scene for her conversation with Asriel, the first thing you see of her is the revolver in like the back of her dress in a belt of some kind.
Yeah.
And she never uses it. I mean, the implication is she's there to kill Asriel. In fact, didn't she say, like in the prior episode, I'm going to kill Asriel? And given the chance, she doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think they did a good job of selling that. The whole blimp scene was not part of the books and didn't make any sense.
I mean, the big battle with the Magisterium.
Yeah, and then, like,
up.
How does Mrs. Coulter magically show up at the top of this hill at just the right moment? There were just a couple inconsistencies in that scene where I felt like if they had actually stuck to the books, it would have been so much stronger.
I don't think Mrs.
Coulter
shows up
at the end of the book.
Yeah, she shows up at the end of the book, but you don't see her in a blimp a minute before that, you know? There's just like I don't know why they added that part.
Well, they clearly wanted the big battle to be part of the climax of the season.
Yeah.
Which is a standard thing to have a climax, you know? Let's have a big battle between the good guys and the bad guys.
Well, but that often happens in the penultimate episode, which you could argue it did in this series with the Bullvanger stuff, right?
But so they put all that in, but then they had the problem of all these people are there fighting. How can we make sure that the final confrontation happens between just these three or four characters on top of a hill? And they had to struggle with that. I thought they at least attempted it to an explanation where they had that bit with the snow bridge. I cannot cross this bridge.
Yes. And that is in the book.
Oh. Because, it's like, okay, so that's why Lyra's alone as she faces it.
The snow bridge thing is like kind of classic. It's like Harry Potter in the first book where he loses his friends along the way and then the last step of the journey he has to do alone.
Yes.
That's pretty classic hero's journey.
It sure is.
So they just need to come up with some way to take all of the really great allies she has come up with across this first season and make sure none of them can be with her at the very end.
We're getting a little all over the place, but when we get back, we will continue to discuss these final insane happenings of the last episode. So Lyra has to cross the bridge, and then she essentially is there, though she has to climb a little bit to get there.
And they use that problem of, like, there's a lower level and a higher level on the summit, basically to prevent Lyra
from getting there in time.
There's that she's literally climbing up to the cage when the guillotine is lowered and she's blown back by the energy.
Right, she's blown back by the energy. And that all happens before Mrs. Coulter shows up, too, right?
Okay. Yeah, the whole scene with Mrs. Coulter and
Lord
Asriel.
Is once the thing is already open.
Yeah, it's backlit by the gateway.
You and I, together, we could take this universe apart and put it back together again.
No, we couldn't.
Lie about whatever you want. Lie about the Ablation Wall, the Magisterium. Lie about the girl. But do not lie about your ambition, your work, or who you truly are. You used to want to change the world, and then leave the Magisterium. Come with me and we will change them all.
But our child is in this world. My place is with her. That is not a lie.
You want that?
I want her with everything I have. This is your journey, not mine. Goodbye, Asriel.
I just don't buy it.
No, particularly her thing, like, I love my daughter and my work.
Yeah, like, why bother having that
really?
In there?
Because as far as we know, that she completely ignored her daughter for the first 12 years of her life.
Right.
And then once she met her daughter, she tried to manipulate her and lied to her. Didn't even mention the fact that she was, in fact, her mother. So really, that's the motivating factor to prevent... she says, I'm not going to go with you because I have to be with my daughter. You don't even know where she is.
Yeah, I found
makes
that
no sense.
Very frustrating. It's just like it was not a believable reason for her to not participate. And I think you have a reasonable enough thing where if she's just like, no, what you're doing is too crazy. I'm terrified of the Magisterium. I can't possibly be involved. Like, that to me would be much more believable.
Right. And then there's the whole other thing. He seems to be saying, come with me and we can bring down the Magisterium.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to say to someone who for the entire TV episode season has been working for the Magisterium.
Well, she has been messing with them a little, I guess.
Well, she has been. But, I mean, considering what she's been doing, which is basically torturing and killing children in order to benefit, she keeps saying, the Magisterium's goals, it's a weird thing to say, well, you'd like to bring that Magisterium. Really? Is that what she's up to?
There's also something kind of obnoxious about him being like, you're more ambitious than you seem, and then her to be like, no, I want to stay with my child.
Yes. I'm just a simple wife and mother.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
They could have solved it in so many ways,
right?
Too. It's like, if you're just Monday morning quarterbacking, even, you know, again, they made changes from the books, but even if we knew, for example, that she didn't know Lyra was alive until very recently, like that Asriel had run off with the baby and disappeared. Sure. And then so then you might make me believe that she had actually wanted to be in the life of this.
Right. Or if she had been keeping tabs on her through some other character that they had established early on, that that was a thing.
Yeah. Even. And what's also weird is that let's assume that throughout this, for whatever reason, Mrs. Coulter had been devoted to the interests of the Magisterium for whom she works. Remember all the scenes in which she says, "You need me, Magisterium. I am the person who can help you advance your goals." If she no longer feels that way, maybe there should have been a very dramatic moment in which she acts on that, when she pulls out her gun and shoots one of the creepy priests, perhaps, or arranges for Lyra's escape, or does something to betray the Magisterium, as opposed to her just saying at the end, Yeah,
I felt like it would have been more effective, too, if they had even managed to build up a little more heat between Asriel and Mrs. Coulter, because it seemed like that was supposed to be part of it, was that, like, he was just so, like, he was seducing her with these ideas, and then she, like, those proved irresistible to her, but even that, I just didn't buy it that she would, like, change her mind that quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The thing that happens that we have kind of tiptoed around is that Roger is killed.
Right. By Lord Asriel.
And we know that for sure because his demon is no longer in that cage.
Yes. And he says and does nothing. There's that one line that says his face is still warm.
Yeah.
They make think maybe he's alive, but his demon's gone.
Yeah.
He's dead. And he's dead in the book, right?
Yeah.
And again, props to the TV makers for like, yeah, that's what happens. Lord Asriel, this figure of admiration, this goal that we're trying to get to, this hero that we're trying to rescue, he just murdered a child for his own ends.
His daughter's best friend.
His daughter's, make it even worse.
Yeah.
And I applaud them for going with that because
I was
afraid they'd back off.
Yeah, I was worried they weren't going to either.
But here's the problem. We find out in the book, which takes place entirely in their world, the world of Lyra's Oxford, that the entire plot, everything that has been leading up to this moment, is Asriel figuring out a way to open a portal into another world, which is so important to him for his reasons of like rebellion against the Magisterium and saving mankind from their oppression, that he's willing to sacrifice a child, to murder a child to do it. It's that important just to open that portal. We don't know where it is, but that's what he's going to do. That's the entire point of everything. And in the meantime, it turns out he could have just walked over to that like little park and just walked through the door. And the fact that they decided to do that, to give Boreal somehow this utterly effortless portal that's just always open, that no one else ever seems to find, kind of so weirdly undercuts the entire plot of the story that I just can't get over why they did that. Even if you wanted to say, okay, season one, we were going to get Will Parry in there because we don't want to, as Trish said, drop him right in episode one, season two. Mm-hmm. Great. There was no reason to have to introduce Lord Boreal into that plot line. It could have all happened in our world. If there would have been a way to do it.
That would have been more confusing maybe because then it's like, then what is the, then there's no connection at all.
Well, I mean, there are things there's all those hints about what happened to her father, the fact that her father is the same guy. I mean, you could have handled it, I think, if you had made that choice. Like there's no portal, but there is, we the viewer will go back and forth between worlds and we will see something happening in our world that has resonance and meaning. It could have been done.
Well, do you think maybe it's to introduce the concept that there are other ways of getting to other worlds beyond killing children?
Well, that's coming up. That's what The Subtle Knife is about. But that to me is something that it should have saved because, I mean, it's one thing to find out after the fact that this extraordinary murderous evil act wasn't in fact necessary.
Yeah.
You didn't have to sacrifice a child to do it. There are other ways. It's one thing to find that out after the fact, but it's another thing to present it as the crowning dramatic act of
I could see that.
And then it turns out it wasn't necessary. He could have just walked over to the park.
I think it makes it all seem more evil and more narcissistic and more, I don't know. I think, you know, had he worked inside the system instead of outside of it, like Mrs. Coulter seems to be more willing to do, he might have found out from being inside the Magisterium how to get between worlds because clearly they know how and they know it exists.
Well, or just Boreal does.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem obvious that everybody knows about it at all. It kind of seems like Boreal might be keeping that a secret.
Yeah. I just, I mean, I would have loved to have been in the room when they were plotting this out and would have loved to hear their reasoning. Why this was something they decided to do with season one. I imagine it has to do with everything we've talked about. Let's introduce Will now. Let's give Boreal more of a role. He's kind of a fringe character in the book. Let's give him more of a role. Let's have like a real strong B plot. But in the end, it kind of defeated the entire purpose of the A plot.
Yeah, I think actually that Boreal would for sure not tell anybody because it negates the entire existence of the Magisterium, right?
Right.
Like they want to keep that on lock.
Yeah.
They
assumed, I guess, that the Magisterium knows and that part of why they have to keep such a tight lock on things is because they know that if they don't, people will figure out that there's something else.
Oh, yeah.
That it's not hypothetical to them.
Yeah, I don't know. I would guess that Boreal is the only one who knows that, just based on the fact that he didn't even have conversations with anybody else.
And remember, if we go way back to episode one, the whole story starts with Lord Asriel presenting at Jordan College his proof that there are other universes.
Right.
And that's what brings down the weight of the Magisterium upon him.
Yeah, he has to escape
him.
The next day.
Bad. The fact that he has discovered this, that is, I believe that they keep saying, blasphemy or sacrilege or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scholastic Sanctuary.
Scholastic Sanctuary. I am so glad we got through at least the last three episodes with nobody saying Scholastic Sanctuary.
That's true. That's very true. Let's listen to Lyra saying goodbye to Roger because it's really sweet.
You gotta make sure they don't win. You gotta go, Roger. All right? Me and Pan are going to go into the skies and we're going to search for dust.
We will make sure your death is not in vain. Goodbye, Roger.
The thing I wrote down right before that scene was, F- all these grown-ups.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I called up the last page of the book because the last sentence of the book.
I was going to ask you to read the last sentence of the book.
Everybody who's read the book remembers the first sentence. Lyra, which is from memory, Lyra and her demon entered the library at Jordan College. Amazing, like, demon, what? The last line of the book, which I think is just as memorable.
Oh, it's beautiful.
So Lyra and her demon turned away from the world they were born in and looked toward the sun and walked into the sky.
Oh, I love it so much.
And I'm so glad they kept to that. But I was looking at the page, and the dialogue you just played is almost from the book. We've got to go up there and search for dust. But you know what line they added? Your death will not be in vain, which made me go, which is a line that has never been said in real life. It is only said in fictions and movies and TV shows over the corpse of somebody. Your death shall not be in vain. You know, all right, maybe Lincoln said it at Gettysburg. Other than that.
Now we'll have to find some instances of it out in the world.
But it was such a bit of like written stuff that I was like, why? Why did you do that?
Yeah, but I thought they pulled it off generally pretty damn well, considering.
Oh, yeah. Again, my quibbles, I hope, do not take away from the fact that I thought this was finally a really good episode.
Do you think Will's phone is going to work?
It's like, what's going to happen to his streak in the New York Times crossword puzzle app?
Right.
If he can't get, you know, I worry
service,
about this.
You
if
know?
He can't
like
get service.
Yeah, because you can't download those ahead of time, can you?
No.
Yeah.
No, I lost my iPad briefly, and I was terrified that it wouldn't
about
upload.
Your puzzles?
I was so terrified of the fact that if the crossword puzzle that I had completed before losing the iPad had not uploaded in time to the server, it would not give me credit for keeping my streak going. And like, so when I see Well, I'm like, if you cross into another universe, can you still reach the New York Times crossword puzzle server? That's
really,
the only important thing.
It's a really important question. Really
Guys, he's like 14. He's going to be TikToking, not crosswording.
That's a good point.
Well,
but
I'm trying to relate to
it. I think partly what makes it, like, the question really caught me because, of course, you know, these books were written before 14-year-olds had iPhones.
Right.
So that just was not, it was not a thing in the books at all. And I'm just curious the extent to which it's a thing in the show.
We'll find out, presumably, next
season. So, Peter, Tricia, I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
Do you want to recap season two of this show?
That's a tough one. I knew you were going to ask me that, and I'm really torn. And here's why I'm torn. On the one hand, to be unexpectedly sentimental, I love doing this with you guys. It's so much fun. And I've discovered that the fun I have doing this with you guys is not connected to the quality of what we're talking about.
I mean, I guess that's very nice. That's a good thing to learn, yeah.
But on the other hand, I keep going back to what that tweeter said that I cited a couple of episodes ago. It's like, why are you harshing on this TV show? Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is I think is pretty clear, I didn't think it was great. I thought, considering how much I love the books, I thought it was quite disappointing.
Yeah. Yep.
And what's frustrating about it in particular is that it really could have been better. We're not talking about some stupid knockoff low budget thing that somebody did because they owned the rights. We're talking about a premiere production from HBO and BBC. They had all the money and all the talent in the world, and it pops up and you can see, you know, they used to say you can see the money on the screen. You can see the talent on the screen. There's James McAvoy and Ruth Wilson and all these amazingly great actors and designers, and it still just fell short. And it just, it makes me frustrated. And those of people who out there who like it, I don't know if they will benefit from me getting on the podcast every week and saying, that sucked.
What do you think, TB?
I mean, I think that if I wasn't recapping it, I'm not sure how eager I would be to keep watching the TV show.
Yeah.
But I am reading the books voraciously. So it did that. Like, it did its job in that it made me excited enough about this world and these characters that I picked up a book, which, as Greta knows, like, I don't read a lot of novels.
Yeah.
So that's actually a big thing for me to actually, like, go buy a physical book and three of them and read them.
And there's, like, a Bobita book club happening.
There is. My mom and my brother and I.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's pretty cool.
I will say to listeners, if you've watched the show, if you've hung with us and you're a little disappointed like I am and you're thinking, what's the big deal? Read the books.
Yeah.
You will find out what the big deal is.
Yeah.
And I think that the TV show varied from the books enough so that the books will still be powerful and meaningful and great.
For sure. Well, and what's really exciting is, you know, I mean, the only book so far that the TV show exists of, obviously, is The Golden Compass. There are two more in the original series and two extra books in this next series that are also great.
I have no doubt Philip Pullman is really, really good at what he does.
Yeah. Especially the most recent one was such a pleasure.
Yeah.
To read.
And I'm going to say that I don't know if you felt this way. I don't know if you've watched it, but the other HBO show of the fall that I watched was Watchmen.
Yeah.
Which I thought was...
I finished it last night.
What'd you think?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah?
Oh,
my gosh. It's, yeah, I mean, I keep wanting to bring it up because there's, you know, again, beloved source material that pre-exists the TV show.
Bad movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there are a lot of weird parallels.
A lot of weird parallels, but also, I mean, it's not meant for children, clearly. Whereas this, I think, I mean, in some ways, the thing that this did right, but just wasn't done for us, is that I think they did make a show that Marcel and Courtney could watch together.
Right.
And really enjoy.
Which is important.
It's good enough kids' TV that adults can watch it happily.
I used to have young kids. It's important.
But it's kids' TV.
But that shouldn't get in the way. I mean, the Harry Potter movies are kids' movies on a great level, and yet many of them are excellent. So, I mean, there's no reason why a show for parents, I mean, all the Pixar movies, there's no reason why a show for parents and kids can't be excellent.
I wanted to tell you, too, we got an amazing email from a woman named Gabriella in Montreal. She wrote us 1,028 words all about how CGI is, like, super expensive and hard.
Yes.
She works in CGI. She says she works in visual FX as a character FX artist, which means she makes fur and feathers and skin and cloth on characters move. And she says even cheating a lot to bring cost and workload down, it would be thousands of human hours and thousands of computer hours to create a bar fight sequence where everyone has a demon.
Yeah. And I appreciate that person writing in and putting it so clearly.
Yeah.
I had gotten that impression from, like, my friend Michael Johnson at Pixar.
Oh, right.
And like, yeah, it's really expensive. I, and again, who knows what went on in the rooms? Like, well, we can do this, but we can't have demons. Can we do it without demons? We're going to have to do it without demons.
Yeah.
And what would that have been like?
Yeah. We also got a really great email from someone named Sarah, who said that Lin-Manuel Miranda's Lee Scoresby is actually a better approximation of Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly than he is of Han Solo.
I can buy that.
Which I think actually is
that
pretty
might
awesome.
What he's channeling.
Yeah,
right?
Because Malcolm Reynolds...
Because he's not like
he's a teddy bear version of Han Solo.
Right, exactly.
Like,
he's
Malcolm
not a
Reynolds,
jerk, but he'll take your money.
Captain Mal would not have shot first.
Right.
That sums it up.
All right. Well, keep in touch with us in 2020. We'll see what happens next. The show is produced by us with help from Justin Bull. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. Our theme music was composed by the wonderful Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music. We are Nerdette Podcast on Twitter. Trisha is Trisha Bobita. I am Greta M. Johnson. Peter is Peter Sagal. And you can also keep in touch with us using the hashtag Nerdette Recaps. And sign up for our newsletter. That's where you'll get all of the news about what's next for us. You can do that by going to wbez.org/NerdetteAF. Is that it?
I mean, I want to recap something else.
Yeah, I know. We'll think of something.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.